Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Hey, spring's here. Time to get out there and get some work done in the gardens. And we're going to give you a little help today. We've got bulbs on the brain maybe today. At least I have, because our guest knows a lot about bulbs and creating a bulb garden and even a bulb lawn. Hope you'll join in as we visit today with Ben Fuda. Ben is director of the Allen Centennial Gardens on the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus. And certainly we're going to zero in on bulbs, but we can talk about other kinds of plants as well, and I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And Ben Fuda, welcome back.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
One-year anniversary coming up.
In just a couple of weeks, May 4th.
At the Allen Centennial Gardens. And for those who aren't familiar with the gardens, tell us a bit about it.
So the Allen Centennial Garden is on the UW-Madison campus. We are about 2.5 acres, but a very densely planted, densely packed 2.5 acres. So we have about, I count, 25-plus different distinct garden spaces within that framework. And we are open dawn to dusk year-round and free admission. So any time is a great time to visit.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. It's a very, very beautiful place. What's the history of it?
So the garden this year turns 27 years old. And historically, it was the teaching gardens for the Department of Horticulture in terms of teaching about ornamental plants, both herbaceous perennials and woody plants. And now it's coming into, of course, its next generation in terms of sort of being a gathering place and really trying to get as many people as we can connected to gardening in the natural world.
And right now, there are things to see over there.
Absolutely. So we are on, as I like to say. We've planted, of course, our traditional tulip displays, thousands of tulips along Babcock Drive, which aren't quite open yet, but with these temperatures we're having, they should be putting on a good show here within days. But some of our newer features include a bulb lawn that we've installed in our English garden. This was an intern project for one of our interns last year, and she created the design, chose the plants in consultation with our garden staff, and through the help of our volunteers and interns, we installed over 3,000 bulbs in our English garden lawn last year. So those are just now coming into full bloom, and it's a wonderful tapestry right now.
So what does a bulb lawn look like? Is it all bulbs?
So it's essentially, if you can picture, you know, things like daffodils and snowdrops essentially popping right up through your turf. And of course, for this time of year, our grass is coming out of dormancy, but it's still fairly short. So all of these bulbs are sort of hovering and floating and dancing above that nice green tapestry. And over time, all of these bulbs are nice, you know, low-growing, naturalizing bulbs. They should colonize and spread, and within a couple of years, the lawn will just be solid purples and blues and whites before no time.
Yeah, that's going to be great. Is it a lot of work to put something in like that?
Oh, yes.
I would think.
So it depends upon the type of project you're working in. And in our case, again, we planted into existing turf. So this required, again, several wonderful volunteer hours, and we're exceptionally grateful for that. And it's of course, much easier to begin if you have a blank slate and maybe redoing a lawn space or putting in a new lawn. It's great to plant those bulbs first. It's much easier to plant straight into that soil, but still certainly possible to plant directly into turf.
What kind of bulbs work best for spring planting?
To be planted right now or for a display right now?
Well, for planting right now, is it a good time to plant bulbs?
There are certain things. The bulbs that will be planted now will be our summer display bulbs.
Right.
So things like gladiolus and cannas and dahlias, those sort of a mixture of bulbs and tubers that really need to be either winterized or dug up over the winter. But of course, everything blooming now are those fall planted bulbs that are now doing their display.
Yeah, and those are really pretty.
Definitely, but I'd also say it's a very good time of year to analyze. I think a lot of us, of course, aren't thinking about the bulb orders we're going to place in October, but this is when we actually need to think about it, because we can see where the gaps or the holes or where we need more color or to move the feeling around a little bit. This is when we need to make those notes.
Ken Fuda, our guest today, talking with him about flowers and bulbs in the Allen Centennial Garden. Great to have him along. Join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Christy in Potosi sent an email and says, I have a small clump of tulips that I got from my husband's grandmother. I'm curious if there's a way to propagate these tulips other than digging them up and separating the bulbs. I'm reluctant to do this. I'm afraid I'm going to damage and maybe lose them.
I would say probably, the digging and separating is probably the safest bet. There are other mechanisms you can use in terms of, you know, digging them up and slicing them in half and doing, but again, that to me gets a little more dicey. I think your safest bet is just doing the traditional sort of lifting and digging and dividing. As far as time of year to do this, I would certainly wait until after they are done flowering and the foliage is just beginning to die back. So the bulbs are going dormant at that point. They've stored all the energy they need for next year, and it should be less of a disturbance to move them at that time. But if it happens around that time, they should be fine.
And so after they flower, it's going to be another few weeks, probably?
I would say maybe, depending upon when they bloom, again, late May or first part of June, most of the foliage is going dormant. And you'll know when, as they start to sort of yellow and maybe lose their color, when they're truly dormant is when you can sort of just gently tug on those upper leaves and they just sort of fall right away.
Ah, okay.
So if there's still some resistance, the plant is still regenerating energy.
Okay. Let's turn to Jill in Madison now. Jill, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I had a question. I have I'm not sure what kind of maple tree in my front yard, but it has a very dense canopy in the summer. And I've planted bulbs below it before. I had some tulips there, but I don't, they only bloomed for a year or two. I think they don't get enough light during their off-blooming time.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if I could learn a little bit about that, if there are any bulbs that might work in that area. And if there were bulbs that worked in that area, how much mulch I could put over the top of them?
So tulips, I would say, are a dicey choice as far as a long-term display. So tulips,
okay.
I would plan to replant maybe every 2 to 3 years to continue to continue the display.
Okay.
There are a few varieties out there. The Kaufmannii tulips, I believe, are a naturalizer, so they will actually beef up and do better over time. And they prefer a little bit of sharper drainage than, they don't like too heavy of soil or standing water.
Okay.
But for those shady locations under trees, I would say things like snowdrops and Glory of the Snow, the China Doxa, those make wonderful naturalizing sort of carpets underneath trees and things like that. They're fairly shallow bulbs, but over time they will reseed and spread, and the display will just get better each year. As far as mulching those over, I wouldn't recommend too heavy of a mulch. If you're refreshing it every year, maybe an inch. I keep it very minimal because if we build that up too much, eventually those bulbs will get buried too deep and they'll just start producing leaves and not flowers.
Okay, I guess right now I just have some hostas in that area because it's so shallow. So I mean, it's so shady. So I don't know if that would be a really good place for bulbs then if I need to mulch around the hostas. I guess that's my...
Sure. I think probably for if you err towards those very early spring ones, again, the snowdrops and Glory of the Snow,
okay.
So many of those are sort of up and almost done by the time the hostas are fully doing their thing.
Okay.
Another great choice is winter aconite. Aranthus is the Latin name for that. And that's one of the earliest blooming spring treasures you can find. They're just these little buttercup yellow flowers. They typically come up through snow many times, and they're just an absolute treasure and delight. And again, those will slowly naturalize and colonize over time as well.
Oh, that's great. So the mulch that I put around the hostas, though, I should keep that only to about an inch if I try to have bulbs under there too.
I would say so, and that will allow most of what you put down to sort of decompose over the season and not build up too, because too much mulch can sort of compact and inhibit water circulation and air circulation, and that can be a detriment to all of the plants, really.
Yeah, good points.
Is there any particular kind of mulch you would recommend?
I would actually use, if you can get your hands on leaf compost or leaf mulch, that's especially for a shady location, that's a much better alternative than the bark mulch, which can sort of compact into those sheets. And the leaves, especially if you're planting under a tree, are sort of what the soil and the plants expect in those conditions.
Oh, great. Thank you so much.
Yep. Absolutely. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Steve in Thiensville next. Hi, Steve. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. Good morning, guys. I just recently moved into a house where the front yard is just a blank canvas. It's just a big green front yard.
Okay.
I was thinking of getting one of those specials I saw from one of the bulb companies. You get like 1,000 bulbs for a couple hundred bucks. I was going to get daffodils, but what should I do to prep the lawn?
For this time of year, there's not too much you have to worry about as far as preparation. The most critical thing when you're prepared to plant those in fall is making sure they get to the proper depth. And so if you're doing especially a couple thousand, I would recommend either investing in or renting a gas-powered auger. So this is rather than you can do it manually with a trowel or, you know, a bulb digger, but probably after the fifth or sixth bulb, you're going to be
mighty sick of it.
Yes.
I'm actually rototilling up the area to make flower beds. I'm going to be planting peonies and hydrangeas and daylilies also. So it's going to be a big area, big project, going to take all summer.
Okay.
So everything's going to be rototilled up. Can I just plant the bulbs that way then?
Oh, absolutely. Yep. That would be perfect.
Yeah, I'm not going to dig 1,000 holes by hand.
Oh, no. Yeah. No, yes. If you can start with a blank canvas, that's the easiest way to go about it, for sure.
Okay, so then should I do anything to the soil? It's very clay. I work with a soil company that I've done gardens before with. They bring in like a mushroom compost. Would that work or something different? It's kind of new to me to do this many.
If you have a little bit of heavier soil, adding that compost, especially if you're sort of starting from scratch, probably isn't a bad idea, just to sort of keep the soil a little loose. There are a few bulbs out there which actually sort of prefer a little bit of heavier soil, and if you even have a little bit of wet feet, the Camassias are a wonderful choice for sort of wet conditions, heavier soil conditions. You know, other bulbs can potentially sulk in those areas, but Camassia really do very nicely.
Hmm.
Okay, well, thanks for the info, guys. You have a great weekend.
Yeah, you as well. Thanks, Steve. Gary in Washburn up next. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
You bet.
I have a construction project going on, and I have some bulbs. They're daffodils, irises, peonies, things like that that need to be moved. They're starting to come up now, and they're in jeopardy. So how should I handle that? And then some new areas around, some slabs that have been poured. I have a slope for drainage going away from the slab, and I'm getting ready to seed those, and I'm wondering if that's an opportunity to put bulbs on those sloped areas around the slabs.
So for transplanting this time of year, it is certainly possible, and I would recommend if you can do it either early morning or late afternoon when the temperatures are a little lower, things are cooler, and they maybe won't be in direct sunlight, especially when we're looking at the forecast for the next week or so.
Right.
That'll just help to reduce a little bit of transplant shock. Another thing we can do is if they're putting up buds right now, I would cut those off, and those can either be brought inside for cut flowers to enjoy, but that'll save the bulb from really trying to push too much energy into flowering and allow them to sort of reroot and regain a foothold and be able to flower again most likely next year for you. So it is possible to move them now, but just sort of minimizing the stress as much as we possibly can for them. And then your question for you said the hillside?
Well, I have these concrete slabs, and there's a slope away from the slabs for drainage.
Okay.
And the soil is just kind of rough and raw right now, and I'm going to amend it with some compost and other material, and then I'm looking to plant grass seed, and I'm wondering if this is an opportunity to plant these areas in bulbs.
Yes, especially if you're starting with that blank slate. That's the easiest way to sort of create this bulb lawn effect. And again, the only tricky thing is, of course, most of these bulbs are fall planted. So you'd have to either just mulching it or doing sort of a cover crop, an annual rye or something like that, just to keep the soil in place, especially if you're doing some amending so you don't lose all of your hard work until that time arrives for fall planting. But then you can still sow grass seed. It'll germinate in cool conditions and get sort of a foothold in the fall. And then by next spring, you'll have a beautiful new lawn with the bulbs coming up through it right now.
That sounds perfect for this area because it's not going to be an area that you're... And what about mowing with the bulbs? I mean, you don't mow this bulb lawn?
So it depends on the types of bulbs you choose. If you're working with the very early spring bloomers and the very minor spring bulbs for their size, not for them being insignificant, things like, again, the crocus or snowdrops, grape hyacinth, things like that, a lot of those, if you mow your lawn high, you can begin to mow your lawn at roughly the same time you normally would, as long as we're preserving most of that bulb foliage so they can regenerate energy for next year. If you're planting anything like daffodils or sort of later season bloomers that need a little bit more time to go to fully mature, for that foliage to fully mature and senesce, we need to give that a little bit more time. So the first mowing of that lawn area, if you're using bigger bulbs, will probably happen in late May, early June, maybe mid-June. And from there, the lawn can be mown just as normal as you normally would.
Okay, we're up on Lake Superior by Shawamigan Bay, so they're just starting to pop up right now.
Okay.
Yeah, perfect.
Very nice.
All right. Thanks.
Good luck.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, having some fun talking flowers today, a little bit on bulbs, spring bulbs, and planting bulbs with our guest today, Ben Fuda from the Allen Centennial Gardens. I'm Larry Mueller. Chris Molina, our on-air producer for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in today for Garden Talk on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller here with Ben Fuda, garden director of Allen Centennial Garden. Great to have him with us today. And you can join him, have some open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Zeroing in a bit today on flowers, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Let's turn to Carla in Mondovi next. Carla, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a bulb question also. I have some alliums that are multiplying, and so I want to know when is the best time to divide and transplant those.
The best time for dividing and moving bulbs in an optimal scenario is once the green foliage has gone dormant or matures. So as for alliums, typically that may happen, depending on the species, again, I'd say late May, first part of June, maybe mid-June. And you'll know they're ready when you can sort of, if you just very gently tug on the foliage above the ground, if it just sort of pulls away with no resistance, then the bulb has finished its work for the season. It's gone dormant, and you should be able to dig those up without too much disturbance. They can be moved while they're still green. Of course, this may be a little more stressful on the bulbs, and it may take another extra year or so before they're really up and back and flowering, but the dormancy time is the best.
Okay, well, I was concerned because once I've waited until the leaves have all disappeared, but then I can't find them.
Yeah.
So if there's still some foliage that I could tug on, then I will try to do it then.
Yeah, that should work.
And then I also have some irises in a bed that has not been worked on for a long, long time. And what is the best time to replant those?
Iris are one of those plants, as I like to say, you can sort of treat them like concrete and they'll be happy. So, you know, again, optimal time is after they've flowered, again, sort of June, maybe July or so, as they go into sort of their summer dormancy. However, again, I've grown iris for years and I've moved them at all times of year and they're pretty durable. I would recommend, though, if you're moving them sooner than later, don't allow them to flower and maybe just trim off maybe 30-40% of any of the leaves, and that will help to reduce transpiration and water loss through the leaves, and just help it to get reacquainted with the new site a little bit better.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, absolutely.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Robin emailed, I had a nice comment. Our driveway is long, built through a hill. We planted one of the hillsides with my daylilies that lined our back lot line. The plants came from my childhood home. It was a lot of work to plant the bulbs on the hill, but it looks great in the spring and summer, and we don't have to mow one of the three hills we have in our yard. It's quite a sight when they're all in bloom.
I'm sure it is. Absolutely.
I would think so. Chris wondered about daylily, has a daylily bed, and wondering about fertilizing. Is this a good? Do you fertilize in the spring your daylily beds?
I would recommend top dressing with either a little bit of decomposed horse manure or compost is probably the best thing to do. Maybe just an inch or so, 12 or so inches around the base of the plants should give them just a nice sort of the hand on the small of the back, gentle boost into the season rather than a industrialized fertilizer. That'd probably be our best option.
And then what about dividing? How long do you go before you decide, okay, I've got to divide these daylilies?
For daylilies, they can, that's up to you, the gardener, I would say. Certain things like iris, after maybe 3 to 5 years, the rhizomes start to get a little cluttered and too dense, and their flowering will be reduced. I've seen daylilies, again, you drive past old farmsteads, and they're still going strong 40 years later.
And had never been divided.
So, it's just up to you and how fast you want them to spread and what you want to do with them, but they don't necessarily need regular lifting and division to be ultra vigorous.
You wonder how, I mean, those orange daylilies are pretty much ubiquitous.
Yes,
How did they, you wonder where they came from, and if they were just an inexpensive flower at the time all those years ago, or what was going on?
I don't know for sure. I think there may be a native one out there, but I don't quote me on that. I don't know for sure.
It's possible. I don't think that orange one is a native, though, is it?
I don't know for sure. I'm not entirely certain.
You know what? We've got some master gardeners listening. We'll probably call and let us know if it is. But they're sure everywhere, and they're pretty. They're pretty. Bill in Oregon emailed, lives in a rural area and has attempted to plant a variety of bulbs. Except for allium and some tulip varieties, the result is the same. Something digs up the bulbs and eats them. Any recommendations for protecting the bulbs or making them less appealing, or any recommendations for less tasty bulbs?
Daffodils are a wonderful choice. If you've ever taken a cut flower of a daffodil or broken the leaves, you notice they sort of have that almost slug-like, sticky, sap, syrupy stuff that comes out. It's very unappealing to us, and it's just as unappealing to creatures. Daffodils are a really great critter-proof alternative, and it's allium is the other option, of course. Any of those ornamental onions, many things typically don't like to munch on. And crocus, I've seen actually tend to be a little bit of critter candy, which is interesting. I didn't necessarily think they were, but we lost every single one that we planted in the garden this year, so I would not recommend crocus. But anything, the chamassia as well, I mentioned a little early in the program, but that's another one that so far that we've seen has been fairly squirrel-proof. Some tastes change from garden to garden, and some critters like some things more than others. So, but I'd say daffodils are a really great place to start.
And it's usually squirrels.
Squirrels, I think, are the prime culprit. Ground squirrels as well, we've seen. Yeah. Any of those little rodents just love to dig and move things around.
Pat in McKinley, Illinois, up next. Hi, Pat. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. And Ben, thank you for having me. It's been fun hearing about all the possibilities. And I would just like to suggest some other possibilities, too, for gardeners that are fun to see. I didn't realize until a few years ago, little trout lilies are a little bulb, and how much they spread and turn into just a carpet of flowers after a few years. At least that's happened in our yard in quite a few spots, and I just love to see them. And, of course, they go dormant then, too, as well as the toothwort and Virginia bluebells and Dutchman's breeches. So just fun little things like that that are natives and might even go in between hostas is a possibility.
Absolutely, and actually that's something we're working on in the Allen Centennial Garden as well, as sort of these mixed plantings and combinations of plants that, you know, seeing a daffodil come up next to a native woodland plant, and, you know, tulips up next to those jack in the pulpits are really visually very interesting, but adds a lot of variety to the garden landscape.
Oh, fun. And I love the Allen Garden. I haven't been there in a few years, so I
got to
get back there now.
Absolutely.
Oh,
we'd
you
got to
come
see
back. Yeah. Yes. Come on back, Pat.
Okay, will do. Thank you. Love
Thanks.
The program.
All right, wonderful. Thank you so much. And you know, you come to Madison, you've got the Allen Centennial Garden. And, of course, then while you're here, there's the Olbrich Botanical Gardens. And then maybe you get over to the I suddenly blanked.
Arboretum.
Yes. I'm pointing at it right
exactly.
now. The Arboretum. So what a great way to spend a weekend.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the Arboretum, their crabapple and lilac displays are going to be looking fabulous in any moment now.
Yeah, it's going to be early.
Yes, yes.
A little early anyways. It's usually May, somewhere around second week of May or so when they're really going strong. But it looks like it's going to be earlier this year. Ben Fuda, our guest today. If you have questions, we have open lines for you at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And I was going to mention that bulb lawn that you were talking about. You have, you mentioned it, but I just started to bring it back up. At Allen Centennial Garden, you do have a bulb lawn, so if somebody wants to see what they look like.
Absolutely. And also, you mentioned Ulrich. They have a wonderful bulb meadow. So our our lawn is, you know, we will come, again, late May, early first part of June, we will begin treating it like we would any other lawn in terms of regular mowing and lawn care. Ulrich's design is a much more, and we only do that because it's used as an event space for us. Ulrich has a wonderful space, which is a mix of low-mow grasses and fescues that only needs to be mown maybe once or twice a year, but a wonderful, fabulous diversity of bulbs, and it's one of my favorite parts in their garden. It's a wonderful thing to check out if people would like to see other examples.
Yeah, very, very good. We have some other things that we can talk about here. You can join in, too, by the way. I wanted to mention things that you've talked about, I know, in the past, like incorporating sort of living architecture into the landscape, things like hedges and shrubs. Talk a little bit about that.
So I think shrubs get, or I'm sorry, hedges might get a bad rap, I think, in our society, only because we've been so trained into thinking that if they're not, you know, these oblong-shaped gumballs and buttons and weird shapes in our landscapes, that's unfortunately the bad misconception I think we have about so many of these exceptional woody plants that really can be used as wonderful living architecture in the landscape. And for this time of year in particular, you know, trees really, they're budding out, but they really haven't fully leafed out yet. But trees can be incredibly architectural and really form the backbone of a garden, especially this time of year as those small bulbs are coming through and beginning to bloom. And hedges as well are wonderful ways to sort of create garden rooms and divide spaces and have fabulous potential to be very architectural.
So they don't have to be necessarily right along the edge every time. They can be in other places.
Absolutely. They can cut through beds and borders. They can be you know, in the middle of garden spaces, but they can really help to draw a space together and again sort of create these spaces in garden rooms. And so they have great potential.
Let's turn to Dana in Oshkosh next. Dana, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have access to horse and chicken manure mixed with shavings that's rotted. Is that safe to put on beds, or do the shavings, are they kind of off the menu?
Are the shavings, did you say they were rotted too?
Well, they've all been mixed together because the manure and the shavings came out of the barns mixed together.
Yeah.
But they've been out rotting, and so I wonder if that's safe to use as a mulch.
And how long have they been out?
6 to 8 months.
Oh, okay.
It could be okay. If you said what type of manure is, you said chicken and something else?
Horse.
The chicken is probably hotter than the horse, I would guess. I'm erring towards maybe giving them a little bit more time to break down. The horse might be okay, but if it's mixed in with that chicken manure, it may need a little more time to rest before it's really will be best for those plants.
But it sounds like you've got a great combination.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
But the shavings themselves isn't a problem because there's nothing wrong with shavings being mixed with the manure.
That's another reason to let it wait to wait a little longer.
To wait. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, you got something good there, Dana.
Yes.
Hang on to it, for sure. Kathleen in Indianapolis, Indiana. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry, and hello. This is a bit of a bulb killjoy question.
Okay.
Because there's a bulb that I'd actually like to get rid of in my yard.
Okay.
It's called Siberian squill, and it is very pretty, I admit, but it's really taken over, and it's encroaching on the area that naturally brings forth Virginia bluebells and trillium and spring beauties and all these lovely native plants. And I've read online that this is not so easy to remove, and I was hoping that your guest has some directions for me to follow.
Okay.
Well, first of all, I'm delighted to see a Hoosier on the line. I am born and raised in Indiana, so I saw Indianapolis and got very excited.
Marvelous.
So, this is an interesting quandary. You know, I think probably manual removal, depending on the size of space you're working with, is probably going to be your best option, just because if it is sort of commingling with maybe some native woodland plants that we want to preserve, chemical mechanisms may not be the most delicate way to go about doing this. But another thing maybe to consider if it's practical is maybe once the bulbs are done flowering, or even before they flower, to if it's possible to get in there and either mow things down or manually remove the flower heads or even the leaves, because if they don't have those leaves, they can't regenerate energy and nutrients to bloom and continue to spread for the next season. So it's essentially a slow suffocation, if you will. Over a couple of years, if we remove the leaves very early, we'll starve out the bulbs. If they can't reach sunlight, they can't spread. So that's one way possibly to go about doing it, depending on the size of space you're working in, of course.
It's a pretty big space now, maybe 25, 30 square feet.
Oh, wow, okay.
It's really spread. And it isn't, it's crowded out all the other flowers, which are kind of surrounding it. So I was thinking I would have to dig them all out, but your method sounds better. So they're pretty much done flowering now, because we're, of course, ahead of you.
Sure.
Ahead of Wisconsin down here. So cut off all the leaves and
those flowers especially. The flowers them being the most critical, just so that they don't set seed, and that's probably how they're spreading so quickly. The leaves, it may take a couple of seasons. It won't necessarily happen overnight, but next year they might put up leaves again. And as soon as you see them, I wouldn't even wait for them to flower. I'd take them off because the moment those leaves come up, they're starting to regenerate energy for next year. So if we can starve them of that energy over a couple of years, essentially we'll just sort of put the fire out with those.
That sounds far better than the digging I was planning on doing. So great. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Thanks, Kathleen. Appreciate the call. And again, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Gemma and Wanakee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, I have ferns that naturally grow in my yard, and I want to move them, and so I was trying to find out what's the best way to move them, and when should I move them, what time of year?
Mm-hmm. Personally, for me, when I've worked with ferns before, again, some of them you can treat like concrete, but others they're fairly durable. I would say they can probably be moved around anytime. Again, but making sure to the time of being sensitive to the time of day so that the roots don't dry out as they're in transition from one space to another. A day with low breeze is good because any breeze will dry out those roots much more quickly. And of course, when they get reestablished, just giving them a really good drink for a few and keeping an eye on them, especially that first year. And for the most part, I think they probably should tolerate that fairly well.
And can I mulch around them? Is that okay?
Yes, mulching should be fine. If you can get your hands on some leaf compost, or usually the municipalities have access to this from leaf cleanup in the fall, that's probably your best mulch option, just because it's more natural to what the ferns are going to be used to in their natural habitat.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, sure. Thanks so much for calling. And let's turn to Tim in Whitefish Bay next. Tim, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Sure, hi. I live in a suburban area where there are many, many, many rabbits and not very many predators to deal with them.
Yep.
And I'm wondering if you have any recommendations about flowers I could plant that would be less appealing to rabbits.
Flowers in general or bulbs?
Flowers in particular.
Okay. I've seen very good success with anything in the allium family or the mint families. And I know when I say mint, people may be cringing, but they're the salvias also fall within that family. So things anything that sort of has fragrant leaves or fuzzy leaves tends to be a little bit more of a deterrent for them. So there are some, Russian sage, for example, is a great. It's in that sort of that salvia family. It's not necessarily a mint, but anything in that genera with again fragrant leaves, fragrant things like that, that they really seem to not gravitate towards those quite much. And again, the ornamental onions, the same story. Both the bulbs, and there are many herbaceous varieties out there that really perform very well.
Okay, agastacea, something like that.
Yep, we have those in the Allen Centennial Garden right next to a bunny condo, and they've walked right past it and gone for other things repeatedly. So I think they give those a pretty wide berth.
All right, perfect. Thanks very much.
Sure.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Give us a call with your questions, comments, or maybe you've got some experiences to share. We're talking, zeroed in a bit on bulbs today, but we can talk other flowers and plants as well with our guest, Ben Fuda, director of the Allen Centennial Garden on the University of Wisconsin campus in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Ben Fuda, from the Allen Centennial Garden. And again, join in, 1-800-642-1234, the number to call with your questions or comments, or maybe you've got an experience to share. We'd love to hear from you. Bill in Madison up next. Hi, Bill. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to know, when is the best time to fertilize spring bulbs?
Fertilizing those spring bulbs, I would say probably I'd wait maybe until after they're done flowering, because once they've done that, then they've really kicked into high gear in terms of regenerating as much nutrients as they can for flowering in the following season. I'd recommend using either top dressing sort of those bulb areas with maybe an inch or so of compost or well-aged manure compost. Again, that should just, again, give them sort of a nice gentle feed. And because for the most part, they should get what they need just from sunlight and from sort of their natural processes. But just that little touch of compost on the top, on the soil surface, will give them a nice nudge in the right direction.
Okay, so don't worry about getting the specialized bulb fertilizer that you see.
It's a better marketing plan than functional. I think the compost is probably our best way to go.
Great. Thanks a lot.
All sure. Right. Thanks a lot for calling. Rocky in Wautoma. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I was just wondering if I could get some insight as to planting yellow onion bulbs, if the deer like to eat the tops.
If you have deer that like to eat onions, those are some very brave deer. For the most part, I've seen the herbivores, critters tend to stay give a pretty wide tend to ignore those alliums for us. So I think for the most part, they should be a pretty safe crop to plant if you have deer issues.
Yeah, for sure. Good luck. Thanks, Rocky. We'll turn to Rob in Wausau next. Rob, hello.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I'm interested in knowing more about low mowing grasses. I'm allergic to grass pollen and looking at buying a family home that has a huge lawn.
Oh.
So there are some wonderful mixes out there that sort of go under the tagline of no-mow or low-mow mixtures. And one particular mixture that we've been using in the Allen Centennial Garden that does exceptionally well is a mixture from Prairie Nursery, which is a local Wisconsin native plant nursery. So this is a mixture of primarily fescue grasses. They sort of slowly form up and colonize and just form this beautiful sort of green tapestry. And so far as I've seen, really have not, you know, bloomed in the similar way that your typical lawn, that Kentucky Blue might do. Hmm. So they can just ship it to you via mail order from this, again, Prairie Nursery, and it's a wonderful selection.
It's called, you know what it's called? Is it just low-mow lawn? Or?
I think it's if you're looking at their selection, it's just a low-mow fescue mixture or something like that.
Okay. All right.
Now I forgot my other question. So thank you. I'll continue listening.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can, you know, always shoot us an email or a text message or go to Facebook and ask that other question too, Rob. Rita in West Salem up next. Hi, Rita.
Hi. Thanks for your show, Larry. It's always interesting.
Thank you.
I'm anxious to get off bulbs because I can't bend my knees anymore, so I can't do bulbs anymore. I've hired a landscaping company to do some bushes around my lawn, and I appreciated your comment about architectural bushes. He's suggesting, however, spirea, and I do not care for spirea, and I'm looking for an alternative to spirea. I also have hydrangeas ordered, which, of course, are popular and fun, but there's not enough variation if I just do hydrangeas.
Sure.
So I'm looking at hydrangeas and the fire, I think it's called a fire bush or something like that, and then I need something other than spirea.
What size is your area?
Oh, it's about a... I have a pond there, and I have a pine tree, so I have those two issues to deal with, and the pine, of course, has acidic soil, but I'd say about 30 by 70.
Okay.
I mean, it's big.
Yeah, that's a pretty good size.
And this is full sun or shade?
Full east and some north and some south.
Okay.
My house blocks the west.
I would look into, do you have a particular height in mind that you're looking for?
Oh, no, I like big ones. I'm a bird lover.
Okay.
So I like places for birds to perch and sing in.
So the two selections come to mind, especially if you're looking for birds. So there's a wonderful native selection out there, our serviceberry.
Oh, yeah, serviceberry. You know, I used to plant that, and it never spread and thrived like I thought it should.
Well,
I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
They have several. It's an understory tree by its native habitat. So if there's any place, again, maybe getting morning sun and afternoon shade, that on that east side of your house might be a really great sort of microclimate to try it in. But they also have several new cultivars out there now, either that are slightly more compact, maybe a little bit more durable, but still have the great fruit set. Of course, they're edible to us if we can beat the birds to them. You know, they're wonderful selections overall. And the other is a fringe tree. And this is another native selection for us, maybe tops out at 12, 15 feet tall. But in probably late May or mid to late May, it's just covered in these sort of frilly white flowers that are just incredible to see, a wonderful fragrance. And they will, in order to for them to pollinate and produce fruit, they will need at least two. So they are not self-pollinating. But I would argue that two is not even enough. they're such wonderful, fun trees. But again, a multi-stem sort of small shrub. Also, it doesn't necessarily have to be in an understory condition. We have one on a west side of a building, a brick building, and it does just as well as the one on the woodland edge. So they're fairly widely adaptable.
Okay, did you say fringe or fringe?
Fringe tree.
Fringe tree. All right, well, thank you so much for your suggestions.
Sure, yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And the spirea, anything else? I guess those were good recommendations to be as alternatives for spirea. Let's see. We have Larry in Oshkosh next. Hi, Larry.
Good afternoon.
Hello, what's on your mind?
Well, I have a front lawn with a lot of oak trees and maple trees, and the grass keeps dying out on me. It, you know, and I'll plant it, replant it, and it dies over the winter normally. And you talk about bulbs in the lawn, and especially under the maple trees.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be a good alternative? You know, the shade is pretty much killing the lawn and everything else, and that. So I don't know if bulbs could last with that much shade or not. But I guess it's an alternative. I'm willing to try anything.
Okay. So I would recommend some of the earliest flowering spring bulbs. Again, the winter aconite could be a good selection. Again, snowdrops, the rock garden iris could all be good selections, mostly because they do most of their growing and energy regeneration before most of the leaves are on the tree. So by the time we get to May, you know, mid to late May, and we really have that canopy, they've gone dormant. They've already done what they needed to do and moved on. So they'll at least, you know, they should produce a display from that perspective. And as far as there's some really great lawn alternatives out there as well, if you'd still like to have that lawn effect. And sedges in particular, it's a native alternative for us to sort of our typical turf grass. And there's hundreds of wonderful varieties of sedges, but Carex is the genus, and it's Carex pennsylvanica is a native sedge, the Pennsylvania sedge. And that one, it sort of slowly colonizes, you know, under woodland, you know, woodland forest floors. It's very gentle, sort of delicate, doesn't get more than maybe 6 inches tall. So it's a wonderful lawn alternative for maybe if you'd still like to try lawn in that space.
What would happen after May? What would it? I'm trying to visualize what it would look like.
Yeah.
So most of the bulbs, if there's not either some perennials or lawn to sort of take the place of those bulbs, most of them will, the foliage will mature and die back, and they'll sort of disappear and melt away. So unless there's something else to sort of take over after them, it will still look a little barren.
That's what I'm trying to avoid.
Yeah. Well, there's other, I mean, the best you can do may be just some some shade-loving grasses, and there are some good ones out there.
Oh yeah, there are some shade-tolerant fescue mixes. Again, the sedges are sort of woodland forest floor native plants. They do very well in those conditions.
Yeah. So consider that.
What was that?
You called them sedges?
Sedges, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So consider that, Larry, and thanks a lot for calling. I wish you good luck. Linda in Fond du Lac up next. Hi, Linda.
Hi, good morning. I wondered what your guest would suggest as the best, as his first or second choice for extreme shade, as in on the north side of a house, only 10, 12 feet from the house, north of the house, and under enormous trees. If you have any suggestions for ground cover there.
So I would recommend the sedges that we just talked about. There's such a great depth and variety of those in terms of textures and colors and forms, and ranging anywhere from just a couple of inches to a foot or two tall, depending on what it is you want to create. Most of them are sort of either clump formers or slow spreaders, and again over the course of a couple of years should fill in the gaps and sort of knit themselves together and should be a fairly good ground cover for you.
Okay, so they're really deep shade lovers then, are they?
Yep, they're natives to the woodland floor, so they're well prepared and well ready for it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Let's turn to Lee in Madison next. Hi, Lee. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I got three comments, and I really liked your show, all the other shows also. Anyway, you mentioned about plants under a tree. I didn't catch the name of the plant. The plant, those trees are right by Curbside. They belong to the city. I can't chop the tree down, so I need some other thing to put by the underneath the tree.
Okay.
So Glory of the Snow is a great selection. The Latin name of that is China Doxa, and that's, a nice sort of slow colonizer spreader, should fill in the gaps pretty well.
The first name is Gloria?
Glory of the Snow.
Oh, Gloria. Okay, I'll write that down. And then another question is, I got lilac bushes, and when they were small from a friend of mine, and they didn't bloom. So then a couple of years later, the neighbor across, it's not next door, but the other side, and it seemed like he planted lilac bushes, but my lilac bushes sort of bloom, but they still, I don't know when to prune them, and what do I do when they don't flower? I really like lilac bushes.
Mm-hmm. So these are relatively young plants, it sounds like?
No, they've been here for about 10 years, and they're not blooming, and I don't know what I'm doing. They were small when I got them, and I planted them.
After 10 years, they actually still should be blooming pretty well, actually. I mean, there's a traditional way most times you would say, Lee, go in there and cut the about a third out and cut the very tallest ones out of the bush.
Okay.
I guess you can try that and see what happens. And I mean, that's really what you want to do, is you want to be rejuvenating every year, taking out about a third of the tallest ones, and you should get better flowers.
So when do I trim them? And now or in the fall?
People typically wait till after they flower.
Oh, okay. So, and then I got another. I heard that lavender is a very irritant to creatures, and I planted. I bought them last year. And I put one by the tree by my mailbox, and then the other two were, I have a little area by the driveway. And so I knew winter was coming, so I covered each one. And when I picked the cover, like just now, they died. But the one by the mailbox didn't croak. It's still there. And I didn't know if lavender... bushes can cope with the cold weather. You have to dig them out every summer.
I mean, they'll take some cold.
Oh yeah, and I think the key thing for lavender is good drainage. So if they're in an area that may hold water over winter or get soggy as things melt or anything like that, that's going to be more harmful to them than anything. So ensuring that they have good drainage, sharp good drainage, is probably the key to longevity. But otherwise, they should be able to be reliably perennial for us most varieties.
Yeah.
Okay. So today, like in April, should I buy lavender bushes when they're short, or do I buy them when they're a little bit taller? Because those ones that I bought, except for the one by the mailbox, they died on me, and I want to know what kind of soil I should use for those lavender bushes.
You can probably buy any size. It's just your personal preference and in terms of how much instant gratification you want. In terms of soil, if you're just the really good drainage is critical, and if you're worried about that, maybe just mixing in a little bit of small gravel or sand can help with that dramatically.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it, Lee. Ken in Janesville. Kenneth, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes, I'm calling for identification, and it's a perennial that's blooming right now, and the flower is a sky blue color, and the petals are like daisy shape, but they're far apart. There's only about, probably 10 petals on the flower.
And how tall?
Oh,
3-4 inches?
Like about a lily of the valley tall. And the petals look like a lily, but it's a lily from the lily family. But
And what do the leaves look like? Are they sort of look like lilies as well?
Or they're narrower. They're narrower, but they have a texture. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm guessing either it's going to be the Glory of the Snow or the Scylla are probably our two most likely candidates for this time of year.
Glory of the Snow or Scylla?
Scylla, yep.
So there you go. Look those up, Kenneth, and see what you find. Great fun talking with our guest today, Ben Fuda, Garden Director of Allen Centennial Gardens, for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this edition of Garden Talk. We've been zeroing in on flowers, talking a lot about bulbs, but other plants as well with our guest, Ben Fuda. Ben is the director of the Allen Centennial Garden. Always great to have him come by. It's kind of his end of his first year at the garden. So he's got a little celebration coming up here in about 2 weeks. But he is ready right now to answer your questions or comments or listen to your experiences with bulbs and other flowers. 1-800-642-1234, number to call. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And Ben, we had a caller who couldn't stay online but who was looking for tips on growing clematis or clematis.
So most of them, they like to have their roots be in shade. So if there's, a way to either have them we found many of them sort of have self-seeded themselves underneath shrubs or trees and things like that, and they seem to like to gravitate to those spaces. But as far as sort of annual care, for this time of year, it's completely fine, if not actually a benefit to the plant, to cut most of it down to maybe 12 to 18 inches. And most of them should regrow, if you're talking the vining types, should regrow in very short order. And it helps to really push the plant into some fresh, strong growth by doing that.
Okay, that makes very, very good sense. And I, before I forget about it, I wanted to mention the events. You, Alan Gardens has a number of events coming up, and let's just go through those before we go back to the phones.
Sure, we do. Our first coming up here on May 7th, I believe, is our Family Gardening Day, and that's a wonderful event for us where we welcome learners and gardeners of all ages, but especially children, of course, to sort of get their hands dirty and have some great gardening experiences. That's a partnership between the garden and the UW Science Alliance and DC Smith Greenhouse, Steenbach Library, the Biotron. We have the Master Gardener Program, of course. Lots of activities throughout the entire day for people, and those details are on the Allen Centennial Gardens website. We also have our Posh Plants event coming up here on June 11th, which is a Saturday, and that is the garden sort of, as we call it, a premier fundraiser and showcasing garden items of distinction. It features we call it a botanical runway show as part of our auction, and it's a wonderful, fun time. We have live music. It's a great time and a wonderful way to support the garden.
It happens right in the garden.
It does, absolutely.
And I know you had a sale, too. Don't you have a pop-up tulip sale?
We do. So another of our newer traditions, when our tulip displays are finished flowering and are ready to transition things over, we begin to dig our tulips, and those are available to the public at a heavily discounted rate. I think it's something like $10 or $15 for a grocery bag, and
wow.
You can take them home and try them in your own lawn. But we'll announce that, again, depends on when things are flowering and happening, but we would guess probably maybe first to second week in May that will be happening, and we'll announce that on social media.
All right, wonderful. Let's go to Sharon and Gaze Mills, who has something for us. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
We are developing a walking and biking trail and going to just seed some of it. What should we be using?
As far as for the actual path itself or along the edges of the path?
For the path itself.
How much traffic do you anticipate it will get?
Oh, we hope a lot.
Okay. A lot is good. I would say I would maybe look into some of those fescue mixtures, the Lomo fescue mixtures. They, from what I've seen in other areas, they've been pretty tolerant of a little bit of abuse. Now, if this is something, again, that's going to get a lot of high traffic, I don't know that there's any plant that would stand up to repeated abuse, mostly from an issue of soil compaction.
Other than Kentucky bluegrass.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But maybe some of those Lomo fescues could be interesting to try. Maybe it's just as a trial basis in certain areas and see what happens.
Yes, that's what we thought. We would try it, see what happens before we do any, break or rock and gravel and that kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. Why not?
Will this stand up to any kind of bicycle traffic?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. There's using plants as a living paving material is tricky if it's going to be very high traffic. And again, mostly from the issue of soil compaction more than anything. It's going to be an issue over time.
Yeah.
On an unrelated topic, how does one develop in one's home garden a sign walk?
A sign walk?
Time?
Oh, time. Oh, time. Yeah. It's pretty simple to begin. When you head to a garden center this time of year, find some of your favorite selections and varieties. And typically those are planted around flagstone, so you'll need a paving system that can sort of allow for things to be planted in amongst the paving. And then for the most part, the time sort of takes care of itself and should fill in the gaps, maybe with just a little pruning and maintenance from you, the gardener, of course. But other than that, it's a pretty simple procedure.
Super. Thank you very much. Wonderful show.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Judy and Eau Claire up next. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I was given a bulb last year from a friend. I think it's called the Surprise Lily, or is it called the Naked Lady Lily or something?
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering when to expect it, and I don't know what it's going to look like.
So it should be up right now in terms of the leaves. So these bulbs will produce their green leaves that look very similar to a daffodil. So if these are anywhere near daffodils in your lawn, they may be blending in. But they should have their leaves up now. They will essentially do just that for the spring, and as most other bulb foliage begins to mature and die back again, probably early summer, it will do the same as well. But then come sometime in August, maybe September, out of nowhere, whenever it's ready, whenever the ground temperatures and such are right, over the course of maybe 2 to 3 days, it should produce a flower spike, again, with no leaves, just the flowers, in sometime in late summer. And it will happen almost seemingly overnight. It will come very quickly.
Well, sounds fun. Thank
All right.
You.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Bill in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I have some daylilies. I put in a fence last probably late September, and the daylilies were right in the way. And I pulled them all out, took them out, and left as much dirt as I could on them. I put them in some open plastic containers or a bag kind of stuff and stored them in my basement in a dry, cool place, dark. And I'm wondering if they're going to even have a chance at surviving if I pull them back out of there and try to put them back in the ground.
I think daylilies, they're an exceptionally durable plant. Yeah. I'd give them a shot. I think you may be pleasantly surprised.
Okay.
Yeah. And do it any time after.
They could go in now.
I think.
Well, the thing is, I'm moving to a new house. I'm not going to be able to put them in till probably like June 15th or something like that.
Okay, if that's the case, I might try and see if you can get your hands on some old pots and get those, just get them into some good garden soil in a container that, of course, will need to be watered and monitored. But I would get them in some growing conditions as soon as possible.
All right, thank you.
Yep, sure. Thanks for calling. And let's move to Jeff in La Crosse next. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I have a quick question about my blueberry bush I planted 3 years ago. It's one of those gigantic blueberry bushes, supposed to produce a lot of blueberries. And every year, it gets a couple leaves, and it hasn't really grown much at all. I'm wondering if I need to have it in a specific location for sunlight, not as heavily saturated soil, because it looked like there was some clay in the soil.
Yeah. It's not the ideal.
And soil acidity for blueberries is really key. They need specific soil pH to really be happy and produce. And they also need something to cross-pollinate with. So if you're working with just a single individual plant, you'll need at least another that blooms at the same time to allow it to be pollinated. Otherwise, the fruit set will be almost low, very low, if not non-existent.
The acid, so I mean, that really is quite important, and people have to, for a lot of the soils here in Wisconsin, we just, you have to amend the soil yearly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I think too, the secondary plant, I was wondering about that. So, yeah, I think I'll try that and actually, check the soil pH and, try a different location along with an additional plant for cross-pollinization. So,
yeah, sounds like a plan, Jeff.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your help.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Let's turn to Steve in Green Bay next. Hi, Steve.
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I've been listening to a few questions about plants for under trees and shady areas, and I just had one suggestion, maybe if it hasn't come up already, and that's a native fern. We're lucky enough to have an area where with some forest around our house, and I kind of placed some of those ferns from the forest into a spot we have on the north side of the house that just never sees any sun. It's isolated back there, and they just love it. And like a maidenhair fern, it's just gorgeous, and it's green all year round. Well, at least in the spring until fall. So, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. The ferns are, especially again in this area of the country, we're so lucky to have some good native ferns and some good diversity for use in that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, okay. Steve. Yeah, appreciate the call. You know, I think it came up just briefly, but what about planting for early spring pollinators.
Yeah, so early spring pollinators, and that's where sort of this layered approach to sort of combinations of bulbs and flowering plants is really beneficial. We have some very, very early flowering spring shrubs. Our witch hazels, for example, do come out, again, right around the time that those winter aconite typically start to bloom, maybe mid to late February, early March, in some cases on a typical year. But again, those are some of the best early pollen and nectar sources for pollinators.
So that's really, really cool. I have a friend who's been a guest on the show for a long, long time, Bassam Shakashiri. In June, they have a home along Lake Mendota, and they have a wonderful flower garden, and that garden flowers, there are flowers in that all year long.
Mm-hmm.
Something flowering. Some friends who were pretty knowledgeable helped with establishing it, and it's just wonderful. It doesn't make any difference when you come during the growing season. They have color.
That's the way to do it. Absolutely.
And is it a lot of work?
No. and you know, I read an unfortunate garden headline last year from a publication that shall remain nameless that essentially said it's too hard to make a garden look good year-round. So just plant for, like, just pick a couple of months and pick plants that bloom there and just focus on that time. And I thought, how depressing to say to anyone who's interested in gardens or wants to add depth to their landscape. And really sort of getting that seasonal interest is about thinking about the layers in your garden. So again, right now, bulbs are sort of on the mind just because that's what's giving us our show right now. But of course, again, those woody shrubs and small trees and even large trees sort of add layers and depth and dimension to a landscape that, you know, most of our herbaceous perennials really don't start to come into their own until maybe May. So bulbs and woody selections that bloom early are native magnolias. Again, a lot of other, the witch hazels, the very early spring bulbs. We can have something to look at every time of year. Absolutely.
Tammy in Madison has something for us. Hi, Tammy.
Hi. I was wondering if you could tell me what would be the best way to, like, resurrect an area to make it habitable. We purchased a house that was not cared for a number of years, and the soil is very compact, and it's one of those areas where the farmland has been plowed down, unfortunately. And we have, you know, those giant thistles and, you know, farm grasses growing. How can I turn this into habitat friendly for humans and nature alike?
Sure. It sounds like you're starting with, and you mentioned the thistles. I'm assuming, do you know if those are the Canadian thistle, those nasty invasive things?
They're the really tall, spiky ones.
Yeah.
I don't know which kind.
Because we do have some native thistle that are beneficial, but I'm guessing these probably are the Canadian thistle, which are very aggressive and invasive. And for really getting this under control, we have to break out the nuclear warfare and chemical warfare in terms of you know, just getting some herbicide out there and starting there. Actually, this time of year would be a good time to apply that, because a lot of these plants are in a very active state of growth, so they'll metabolize the poison quicker, should kill them more quickly and efficiently. But I would also recommend, once that's done, plan to do maybe a couple of treatments over the course of the year, just because something else may survive and try and push through, and you don't, of course, want to put a garden in and still have sort of a problem lurking below the surface. So making sure that you're starting with as clean a slate as possible will probably be the best alternative there.
So use an herbicide over the course of a year to make sure everything's gone, and then next year plan on doing whatever we plan on doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you do that first planting next year, you know, for the first year, a couple of years of establishment, some nice decomposed distressed leaves, leaf mulch is a really great, you know, mulch solution to put on top of that, just to help suppress any weed seeds that may be in your soil. And if you're using some natives and other plants that will form a great colony, then that, once those are established, it should be a much more stable community for you.
And how big is your area again? I didn't.
Well, we're talking about the, you know, berms around the house, as well as, you know, the areas that used to be planted that have overgrown while the house was vacant.
Okay.
So quite a bit of square footage when you think about the time and effort that it's going to take to rehab the eyesore that it's become.
One of the things you really want to do is to get the camera out and get some photos. I hope you have maybe got some already of the property because you're gonna want to have a story to tell people later on, and it'll be fun for you to be able to look back. Believe me.
And yeah. I would also mention if you have any trees or shrubs in there, even if they may feel overgrown at the moment, maybe once you clear away some of the weedy things that are near the base of them, and really take some time to look at them, look at their form, because while they may seem big and rangy, once they're sort of cleared out from the things that are around them, there may actually be some very impressive specimens back there that just need a little tender love and care, and they can bring out the best side in all of them.
Yeah,
I'm all for letting things stay.
Yeah.
Not looking to take anything out that I don't have to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Those Canada thistles are going to be tough to get rid of, but you're just going to have to keep at it. And, there as Ben was saying, there's some heavy-duty chemicals that you can apply directly to the cut them, hack them, and then apply that chemical directly to the plant, and you can kill it.
Is it a spray chemical? I've heard paintbrushing it on.
Paintbrush it on if you want.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time and help.
Yep, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Wow, we've had some great calls and questions, and I could still have another one or two yet. If you've got a question, give us a quick call at 800-642-1234. There's always something new every year. Are there any new flowers this year that really are in the last year or two, let's say, that have really stood out in your mind, Ben?
It's hard to say, only because it's like asking which of your 3,000 children you love the most. There's a Monarda out there, which isn't necessarily new, but it's becoming more widely available, called Eastern Bee Balm or Monarda Bradburyana. And I know the Flower Factory is carrying this here locally for us in Madison, but it's just a completely amazing, triumphant garden plant that everybody should grow. It's a wonderful native.
What does it look like?
It's a very short Monarda compared to our tall garden variety, so maybe 18 to 20 inches, lavender blue flowers, the same sort of flower form as our other Monardas, but the leaves have a really great sort of iridescent purplish-red blush, and they also have wonderful fall color on those leaves as well.
Oh, really cool. Dennis in Appleton, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call.
I got a quick question on Creeping Charlie. We've been having it in the yard for the last couple of years, and I'm trying to eradicate it, but I want to make sure that I'm using the right stuff.
So as far as herbicides?
For herbicide, because I think to dig it out would be pretty, it'd be like a 10 by 12 area. It had been growing for the last couple of years, but I thought maybe it would take care of itself. I put some on last fall, but then it's still there, so I'm just trying to figure out. I know that the herbicide I used, I think it said that you might have to put another dose on in the spring, so I wanted to make sure that...
When it's flowering. If you're going to apply some chemical, the time to do it is when you see those purple flowers.
Okay, all right.
And it usually typically does take a second application. Mm-hmm. On a 10 by 10, I've said this on the show in the past. One of the ways I get my daughter, who's now 12, and we go out in the lawn and get down on our hands and knees, and we just start pulling it. And it's amazing how much you can pull in a half hour. As just a pile. And frankly, it doesn't get rid of it, but it keeps it at bay. And because it's pretty much always going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Birds are going to bring it back. There's just no way that I can see to get rid of it. And it's kind of the same with violets. Violets in the lawn, I gave up on kind of get rid of violets.
Embrace them as a part of the life cycle.
I don't know what else to do with violets, and I'm that's what I'm doing. Embracing is as part of the life cycle. And Ben, it's been great. I hope you'll come back and be with us again. It was a whole year, so we need to get you back sooner than that next time around.
Sounds great. I'll look forward to it.
Yeah, thank you so much. Ben Fuda is the garden director of Allen Centennial Gardens. Great to have him with us today. And we will have him back, and we will talk again about plants, other kinds of plants. In the meantime, let's take a look at what's coming up on Monday. We'll talk physical therapy. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum will be our guests. And then next week on Garden Talk, we'll take a look at the perks of straw bale gardening again and how to get started with a straw bale garden on your own. Thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.